Welcome to the Drill Down, the business stories behind stocks on the move. I'm Corey Johnson. Today is Friday, July 2nd. Just ahead, pow! Just in time for fireworks, we'll drill down to the booming ammunition business. Yeah, I said booming. Plus, is there a cure for Alzheimer's getting closer? We'll talk about one biotech business that has just gotten a big boost. And we'll drill down to the big company behind Priceline, Kayak, OpenTable, Booking.com. And our guest says it's doing better than you might think. But first,
the Drill Down is brought to you by Era, a one-stop equity platform where you can seamlessly connect to any earnings call and surface actionable insights automatically. Era's AI-powered tools will allow you to work faster and smarter. That's Era, AIERA.com.
A long holiday weekend is the perfect time. Listen to all those episodes of The Drill Down that you've missed. It's easier to not miss them, of course, if you subscribe, if you click the follow button on your favorite podcast platform so you can catch all of our Drill Down episodes.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod and connect with us directly on our website, bizpod.net.
I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to The Drill Down, where we explain the business stories behind stocks and the move. Joining me today, editor Ben Wilson in the role of Ed McMahon, or, you know, pick your sidekick.
Big shoes
Isaac's
to fill.
Away. Ben's here. Glad to have you, or at least Ben's always here. Ben's microphone's on, I should say. But we're glad to have you, Ben. Thanks.
Good to be here. Corey, go ahead and tell me the three most important developments in the world of business today.
All right, so I want to start with one that I think isn't being seen as a business story, but is. It's a big business story. It's the 15-count indictment of tax fraud and other charges filed in New York against the Trump Organization and its longtime chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg. This is a business story. This is not a politics story. I don't want to get involved in politics. Our politics don't matter here. I think what's really interesting here is how this worked from a tax perspective. I know someone who teaches tax law as how to cheat to get the students more interested in tax law. This is how they are accused of cheating. So the company, although it's 15 counts, New York tends to make you break up the counts into a lot more than you would in a federal case, whatever. But specifically what this talked about was ways that the Trump Organization alleged compensated employees without listing the compensation in their W-2 forms. So they kept separate spreadsheets showing how much these employees, not least of which Weisselberg himself, were getting in free rent, cars, tuition, millions of dollars. But these efforts to hide this income, to pay off the books, the phrase off the books is used in the indictment, are kind of interesting both from a corporate perspective and from a personal perspective. So from a personal way, again, these are all alleged, if Alan Weisselberg is getting benefits and not paying taxes on those, if he's living in New York City and pretending not to live in New York City and the company's helping him shield that he's not paying New York City taxes, he's paying less in personal taxes, right? That's a big part of this. So all the taxes that he might otherwise owe are not being paid. But the company is also lowering its tax bill because it's listing these things as expenses to be deducted against other things, that the profits that they might otherwise have. So by putting, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars into hidden benefits to employees that are called, you know, whatever you want, costs, holiday gift costs, rental, described rental costs, they're lowering the taxable income for the company and they're lowering the taxable income for the individuals. So who gets screwed in the end? Everybody else has got to pay more taxes. I mean, it's particularly galling, again, if this alleged case is true. To me, it's particularly galling to individuals and a company that takes a lot from the government, right? The roads, the bridges, the sidewalks, the New York City police walking around Trump Tower, the notion that they're paying less than their fair share in taxes and getting more of the benefit because they demand so much of the city, whether it's in the way they build their buildings or protect their buildings or the infrastructure that supports that great city, is particularly galling. But I think it's interesting from a business standpoint when we look at the story as it evolves, and there's every indication that there's a lot more to come in this, Ben. Okay, second most important business story today, U.S. unemployment numbers out for the month of June, and unemployment, well, lots of all kinds of employment figures out. Unemployment ticks up to 5.9%, higher than, you know, 5.8% in the prior month, not too much worse, but a little bit worse. Within this, and this is always my favorite part to look at, Ben, when you look at the employment results when they come in, look what's strong, look what's weak, because they break out all these different sectors. So leisure and hospitality, government, trade hiring, trade, transport, hiring way up, in particular, leisure and hospitality up 343,000 jobs. But other businesses, financial and construction, down. Construction lost 7,000 jobs, third straight monthly loss here. Now, it's worth noting that the leisure and hospitality sector, which has the lowest wages in our economy, right? Those are the lowest paid workers in our economy. But they added 1.6 million jobs in 2021 and 6 million jobs since the bottom of last April. Now, unfortunately, the number of individuals unemployed for 27 weeks, long-term unemployment, they make up 42% of the total unemployed. Sometimes when we see these economic disruptions, what we find is people at the very bottom just don't get back up again. And we're seeing that certainly the unemployment numbers, the persistent unemployment is quite gripping for a lot of people.
That's a tough spot for people to be in. With all of those added jobs in leisure and hospitality and government, what are some of the other jobs that are losing out on people aside from construction?
Financial increasing. And construction were the only places where there was a downtick. Generally speaking, employment figures were strong across the board. And because, you know, again, compare, you know, retail. Retail added 67,000 jobs in the month. Construction lost 7,000. That was the only real negative. Financial, we'll call it 1,000, not kind of terribly important there. But unemployment, you know, gripping unemployment, lasting unemployment, structural unemployment that may have been exposed during this recession and stuff we talk about in the show all the time about the way business is changing. Some people maybe have been left behind faster as well during the most recent recession. All right, finally, third very important business story of the day. Let's talk fireworks. Worth noting right now, 2020 fireworks sales were pretty strong. Virtually all of the fireworks in this country come from China. $358 million worth of Chinese fireworks were purchased last year in the United States. The number two supplier of fireworks, Spain, gave us $3.7 million, so about 1/100th of what China gave us. After that, Thailand, Hong Kong, Japan, Germany, Mexico, Italy. That's from the U.S. Comptroller database as reported by Statista. Also worth noting, folks, firework injuries. Don't be one of those morons this weekend. They are, in the words of Statista, skyrocketing in the U.S. The number of non-occupational firework injuries treated in U.S. hospitals hit 16,000 last year. It's the highest in any of the last 15 years measured. And so people screwing around with fireworks, just don't do it. Leave it to the pros. Get together with your fellow vaccinated humanity and enjoy the oohs and ahs.
Somehow something seems very ironic about how many of the 4th of July fireworks are imported.
Yeah, I what I'm thinking is if people were willing to go to the hospital last year in the midst of COVID, that shows you how badly hurt they were. And maybe, again, it's something best avoided.
Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Well, let's start with Elector.
Stock ticker is ALEC, A-L-E-C. It was up 49% today and 121% over the past year. What's going on with them?
Important biotech company, interesting biotech company based in Silicon Valley, right near the San Francisco airport, actually in San Mateo. This company announced a huge deal with GlaxoSmithKline, a global cooperation agreement for two clinical stage monoclonal antibodies, which are known as AL001 and AL101. Now, the Elector's lead program, their AL001, is a treatment for frontotemporal dementia patients with a single GRN mutation, and it's been given orphan drug status. So that's a sign that it might get approved faster. Orphan drug designation means that there's a complete lack of a current treatment for the patients who suffer from this. Now, both of these Elector-designed molecules, AL001 and AL101, are, and they call it AL001. Why wouldn't they just call it 001? Really? But in the conference call, that's not what they do. They're both designed to increase something called progranulin, which is a compound regulating the immune activity in the brain with genetic connections to lots of problems, right? Lots of neurodegenerative disorders. Think about Parkinson's. Think about Alzheimer's. This is exactly what this stuff is going after. And these are expensive programs to develop and test. So this Glaxo deal, really important today. Glaxo is going to give the company $700 million in an upfront payment, in addition to potential milestone payments worth up to $1.5 billion. Now, AL001 is currently undergoing mid-stage and late-stage trials, including a really important phase 3 trial for this, this gene mutation. And if 001 you know, passes, obviously it's going to be a new treatment for Alzheimer's, of which there have been so few, as I mentioned, orphan drug. AL101 is targeting more prevalent neurodegenerative disease like Parkinson's, and that's in a phase 1A trial. Now, according to the terms of the deal, the company's going to jointly commercialize the treatments in the U.S., and GlaxoSmithKline will commercialize AL001 and AL101 outside the U.S. with tiered royalties coming back to the company. But the idea that this is essentially paid for, that the development of these drugs is not something that this company needs to worry about anymore, that their bills are going to get paid, they just got to focus on the science and the testing, it's a game changer for Alector. Here is the chief operating officer, Shiraz Suleiman.
Say that we're very excited about the fact that the collaboration fully funds the global development of the progranulin franchise, which does indeed allow us to continue to exploit the rest of the pipeline. And we intend to do so. We have a number of risk genes that are targets for potential therapeutic development. As you may be aware, now we can use the rest of our resources to fully, perhaps even accelerate our research pipeline, which is part of the goal now that the progranulin programs continue to be fully funded. So we are excited about the overall company goal thesis that this deal allows us to do, because now we have, again, just a plethora of resources to apply, not just across the progranulin program to expand into new indications, but also to really continue to accelerate the potential of our research pipeline.
So deal's paid for, more research to come, more drugs to come. Nothing but good news for this company.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
Santander Consumer USA.
Stock ticker is SC. It was up 11% today, up 127% over the last year. What's going on with them?
Big move in the stock today because Santander Holdings USA, not shocker, part of the big Spanish bank Santander. Well, Santander has submitted a proposal to acquire all of the outstanding common stock of Santander Consumer USA Holdings they don't already own for $39 a share in cash. Santander USA already has 80% of the company. They're just going to buy the rest out.
So what does Santander Consumer do?
Basically an auto lender. And that's a really interesting business at this point in the economy and in the world of business. It's a tough business right now. On the positive side, prices of cars are high and the size of loans are a little bit bigger, but there's a shortage of inventory of new cars and there are fewer deals to be had. Now, some people have warned that Santander has exposed itself to riskier credit just to get deals done. But in their last earnings call, the company said those concerns were not bearing out and that consumers had fatter wallets thanks to stimulus checks. And Santander says that their underwriting standards evolved during the pandemic and it's really helped keep them out of trouble. Now, every lender in the world ever has always said that. Oh, we really know who we're loaning to. We're not taking on bad loans. Who would do that intentionally? Nonetheless, the notion that Santander is coming in and buying out the junior company kind of suggests that they're not going to buy a big mess when they could spin more out if they really thought there was a problem there. Here is Santander Consumer's Mahesh Aditya. He's the CEO, talking about what they were seeing in a post-pandemic world.
We have basically two sort of countervailing issues going on. One is obviously, this whole government stimulus, which is having a significant impact on people's cash flows to the positive. And that, as Fahmi said, that is suppressing our loss rates and making everything look much lower and much better performing than it perhaps would be once the economy is sort of set on its own. And the other is, what are the fundamentals in our portfolio and in our underwriting practices, and what is it that we are seeing below the surface in our book that's giving us some cause for optimism that coming out of the crisis and coming out of the stimulus regime, that the economy is going to be self-supporting and it's not going to blow up in terms of, bad losses or whatever. So, we are pretty confident that right now, just given the underwriting quality, and as Fahmi says, we are not pricing to the lower loss rates and all of the other aspects of P&L, that things will be pretty stable once the stimulus comes off.
So I think it's really important when we see a company CEO who's very involved in lending at the consumer level saying this economy is going to be self-supporting. We're not going to need all the stimulus. we're not going to need all the QE coming out of the Fed to keep things going here, and they can see it and they're betting on it.
Well, it is an exciting perspective, but it does kind of seem like he's betting on a lot of things that he can't control for the safety.
Yeah, but he's on the ground seeing it. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but well, the number one, they're right there on the ground seeing what's happening with the consumer. They can really see if these people can pay these loans or not. They can see on a very micro level when just checks don't come in, people owe money on their car and just don't pay it. And so I think it's kind of encouraging to see that from the ground level. And then from the corporate level in Spain, Santander taking out these guys saying, hey, we want to own the rest of this business. We don't want to give up any of these potential profits.
Well, that is kind of exciting then. Corey, what is your next drill down?
Is there ever a company with more of a Bugs Bunny kind of name? It's not Acme. It's a great bread company here in San Francisco. No, Ammo Incorporated.
Ammo Incorporated. And just along those lines, their stock ticker is POWW, POW. It's down 5% today, but still up 9% this week and up 174% in the last year. Tell me more about POW.
Yeah, so we've talked about the gun business a little bit in the show. We talked about Smith Wesson, I think it was a week or two ago, and how their sales were constrained a little bit because there's just not enough ammo out there. So it's good to be in the ammo business right now. But, you know, the increase in gun sales over the last year, especially last year, with the pandemic, protests on the streets, the storming of the Capitol, Biden's election, people watching The Walking Dead, I don't know. People are buying guns like crazy, and maybe there's some crazy involved there, and they're buying ammo. And indeed, investors are buying shares of ammo. Well, today there was some new data. This comes out monthly. It's very important. Maybe the most important number in the gun business and the ammo business is the monthly FBI National Instant Criminal Background Check System monthly release. They tell us how many background checks were done every month. And in June, they were just down a lot on an unadjusted basis. NICS background checks were down 22% over last year. It was still 3.1 million background checks, but a lot less than last year. On an adjusted, of course, I should back up a little bit. People have to fill these out when they legally buy a gun. So the background check information down 22%. On an adjusted basis, the checks were down 41% to 1.3 million. So the decline in background checks was expected because of the tough comps because so many guns were sold last year. Now, that's bad news for gun sellers, but it's good news for the ammo business. And all those historic gun sales from last year, they're going to need ammo. And Ammo Inc. is just now catching up to that demand. They're opening a new factory this year. They're signing deals with the military. They've also acquired a business called gunbroker.com. I don't know if you know this website, Ben. But gunbroker.com also sells guitars and musical equipment, I discovered today. If you're interested, in any case, here is from the conference call of the quarterly conference call they held earlier in the week. Here is the CEO of Ammo Inc.
We've seen no slowdown in the consumer demand following the election. If anything, our sales have increased. At this point in time, we have about $200 million in back orders, and we've continued to buy more equipment to scale our capacity and fulfill our orders. And right now, I see a big surge over the last 2 weeks since we moved into everything from Payson into our facility in Manitowoc. We've had some record-breaking days over the last few weeks, so we feel very comfortable that we're probably 3 to 6 months out. But when you look at that, you got to look at the caliber. But I would say we're close to 3 months out now on orders.
I mean, isn't that amazing? They've got 3 months of backlog. They're producing everything they possibly can, and they still can't catch up. Such is the state of this world and America and guns. And Ammo Inc. All right, coming up next, we're going to take a look at the business behind Priceline, the business behind carrentals.com, the business behind maybe the most useful site in my life, OpenTable. Oh, and Kayak as well. That company, Booking.com, our guest, Knights of Columbus Asset Advisors, CIO Tony Monopoly, joins us after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Era's event access and monitoring intelligence platform improves earnings season and the investor events in between through comprehensive calendar tracking, one-click event access, dynamic monitors, multicasting, and more. Powered by an advanced language processing engine, which consumes some 40,000 investor events annually across 10,000 global equities. Learn more at Aiera.com. And remember to join the Drill Down on Twitter and Instagram at DrillDownPod. Link up with the Business Podcast Network on LinkedIn and check out our website, bizpod.net. Let us know what stocks we should be drilling down on.
Welcome back to the Drill Down. Joining us right now, Knights of Columbus Asset Advisors CIO, Tony Monopoly. Tony, thank you for joining us. Knights of Columbus Asset Advisors is, I guess they weren't hiring a Kennedy or a Berkowitz. We got to get a Monopoly, really?
Well, it's a great name for the investment business, Corey.
Yes, and then some. What is Knights of Columbus Asset Advisors?
So Knights of Columbus, real quickly, the Knights of Columbus itself was founded in 1882 in New Haven, and we're the world's largest Catholic fraternal organization. It was founded by a priest who we're hoping is going to be canonized soon. And he really started it to help the widows and orphans in and around New Haven because the Irish-American and Italian-American citizens in New Haven building the infrastructure were dying young and leaving widows and orphans. So fast forward to 2014, taking a big jump from 1882, we decided at that time to take what was the captive investment arm of the Knights of Columbus and create Knights of Columbus Asset Advisors. So it's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Knights of Columbus. We are an SEC registered investment advisor, and we have a family of nine Catholic compliant mutual funds, and we've got some private funds and some separate accounts. So we run, I guess it's about $1.3 billion, $1.4 billion outside of the 28 plus billion that we manage on behalf of the Knights of Columbus's insurance.
Interesting.
Operation. Yes. Interesting. Nobody knows.
Now they know.
I'm hoping so.
Speaking of New England, speaking of Connecticut, you have brought to our attention a company called Booking Holdings based right there in Norwalk, Connecticut.
Yes.
Big company. Tell us how that business works.
Well,
most people know probably Kayak or bookings.com, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Booking really operates. They all built, frankly, off of the heritage of Priceline, right?
Jay Walker Priceline, and the great Priceline guys. Yeah, back
so
in the day.
Priceline started, with that name your own price, and it empowered people to name their price and figure out what they were willing to pay for a hotel room. And Booking and Kayak operate in a similar way, which is they've got that platform. They are constantly looking for best prices, hotels, airlines, rental cars, and how to bring that to the fore. Now, obviously, we saw the entire industry go in the tank when that little import showed up on the American shores last year, and really all travel shut down. Business travel.
You're not referring to a fiat. You're referring, of course, to COVID-19.
To COVID, yes. Exactly. So everything went dormant. All kinds of business travel, all kinds of leisure travel. And I actually saw something this morning that I thought was very interesting, knowing that we were going to be talking today. Priceline, as we mentioned them, actually did a work-life balance report. And what they found is that 92% of Americans are poised to, as they commented on it, vacation with a vengeance. So people are just, there's pent-up demand, ready to go. And 52% said that they're going to go somewhere this summer, and we're starting to see that big pickup.
I'm not a big fan of the anecdotal reporting.
Yeah.
It seems to me that's that question. Yeah. But having said that, last week I was in, I was in Maryland, Washington, D.C., Virginia, New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. And yeah, the airports were crowded. The rental cars, as we know, there aren't a lot of them. They're sold out. The prices are through the roof.
Yeah. Well, Corey, I'll tell you an interesting sideline. Beyond my responsibilities at the Knights of Columbus, I'm also on the board of a privately held company called Luxie that is in the livery space. And as you can imagine, so think of it like Priceline, but for livery vehicles. And it's right. National. In fact, it's international.
Taxis. Limos.
No, this is black livery cars.
Right. Okay.
So it's trying to sit between kind of the Uber X garden variety car and the Uber Black. But in any event, all of a sudden it went from dormant, dead during COVID to rocketing. And the biggest challenge, and this also relates back to booking and the entire travel and leisure industry, these livery companies can't get enough workers to drive the cars. The demand right now is outstripping the capacity. You mentioned the rental car companies, most of them during COVID, to avoid having to carry the cars, sold off their fleet. So,
right.
You know, everyone. Well,
and probably you had a lot of livery drivers did the same thing. They sold their cars because they weren't getting any work and they had an asset
sitting
there.
And then they went off and did something else. So you're now trying to rebuild this industry. So we've owned Booking for some time. It's been, you know, in the last year, the stock's performed well. Through this morning, it was up 38% year over year. It's been basically flat this year. But large, we like the fact it's got really large institutional ownership. You look at the four largest holders are Vanguard, BlackRock, T. Rowe, and Capital Group across their various mutual funds, commingled funds, separate accounts, what have you. But those four companies account for over 23% of Booking. So they've got...
I'm much more interested in how their business works, right?
Sure. Sure.
So help me drill down on that a little bit. So they've got bookings.com, they've got rentals.com, they've got Priceline, they got something called Agoda, they've got Kayak, and they've got OpenTable. I'm a power user on OpenTable, don't get me wrong.
Me as well.
It's a problem. It's definitely a problem. But how does this business fundamentally work?
So they're basically serving as a platform. There's advertising. There's, you know, so they'll generate some banner ad revenue, but they're also generating, they get discounts, particularly when they're not so much on the open table as much as you and I would wish, but more with the airlines, the hotels, and the rental cars when you can find them. They're generating by disintermediating, by bringing individuals to these companies, they're absorbing that unused capacity. And when you think about a hotel, which basically in that business, you're renting up your capacity every night, or airlines trying to sell every last seat. If you've got someone that can help you fill unused capacity, that's your best friend. And that's, they all really launched off of that original name your price theory from Priceline and have built on it. We like the whole concept of it. Because the other piece is it's do it yourself. And how much of our life now is on our phones, on our tablets? We're building a new house. We're getting ready to close on a house. I did my, I've not even talked to the mortgage people. Everything's been done online. Downloaded my tax returns, sent them over in a portal. So this has really allowed for individuals the ability to say, hey, you know what? I need a car. I'm going on vacation and I can snap it up on my phone. The big move that they're making now and could be game changing is that they're getting deeper and deeper into the corporate travel business. And we see corporate travel really coming back in the second half of this year. I'm excited. I've got my first business trip in a couple of weeks in over a year. So I'll be heading to Texas and then out to California. And it's
the water's warm. It's not Portland, but you're welcome out here in California anytime. Yeah, business travel is definitely coming back. We saw that in the comments we heard from United Airlines and their kind of annual update. That's definitely a thing that we're seeing return. But I wonder, you know, we're at a place, we already had a lot of planes retired. We obviously, the rental car fleets are kind of gone, as evidenced by what it costs to rent a car. The Avis woman at Avis told me on Friday last week, that to rent a mid-sized sedan in New York City for a month is now $3,500. I rented a Jeep Gladiator for 4 months last year, and it was about $3,500. So by comparison, right, I might have gotten a good deal. Nonetheless, that's kind of where we're at, where you've got about a 4X revenue increase in rental car prices at the retail level, and yet there are fewer of those happening. If Booking requires excess capacity to sell – there might not be a lot of excess capacity right now in the market.
Well, that's certainly going to be the challenge. Now, I will tell you, we're seeing the airlines talking about buying more planes, opening up more routes, getting those planes out of storage and starting to grow. Look, if the rental cars, Corey, if the rental car companies see demand, it's pretty easy to get Ford, GM to rev up the machine assuming they can get chips. Well,
I was going to say, it's not, though. It's not anymore, yeah. Right? They can't get the parts. They can't get the semiconductors. They're saying that those delays are going to go through the end of this year.
Yeah, my son, you know, as we talk about the man on the street, my right. son has ordered a new Ford Bronco, not the Bronco Sport. We can't have that once the
new Ford Bronco. The Which new is Ford weird Bronco. Because he's 4 years old.
Yeah.
No, and, he's not 4 years old.
But he's been getting emails from Ford, and the date keeps getting bumped out further and further. And when you're a 23-year-old old guy who's working hard, put away a bunch of money, and you want to buy your truck, 3 months seems like an eternity. But they're having a chip problem and some other materials. But right, no,
so doesn't that impact the business of booking them?
It's good. I think it will over the short term. I do believe that we're going to see, particularly what I'm hearing when we're talking to the chip people, the foundry people, that these problems are going to start alleviating themselves over the next few months. And with a stock like Booking, I'm not a market timer. I want to be there. And this company, you know, on a consensus basis, we see earnings up probably 36% this year versus last year, and maybe up as much as another over 50, maybe as high as 60% next year, just with the wave of stuff coming in. So yes, I think short term, you're spot on. There's going to be some supply constraints, but I think coming out of this, this company is going to be poised well. Look, they're the world's largest online travel agency for lodging, airline tickets, and car rentals. So they've got the portal. Booking is, they're a go-to, right? If you're going to do this online, they're a go-to shop. They're going to have this bump. I think you hit it spot on, but we think, you know, this is a valley before this thing comes through the other side.
And you think this was traditionally a web-based product as opposed to a mobile-based product. I mentioned that because what we've heard from so many companies is they want to have their own app, because what happens is then they get directly to the consumer. If they're aggregated on the web, they might not be on the phone, and that's kind of their goal.
That's correct.
That's not good for these guys. Or you think Kayak and OpenTable own it on the mobile device?
I do. I think they're going to hit it on the mobile device because it's easy. But the key thing is that it's the web development. So they've got to make sure that when you're looking at your tablet versus looking at your phone, that app works. Because I'm sure you get as annoyed as I do when you're trying to do something on your phone and the app isn't quite configured and you get stuck in no man's land. So if they're going to want to play hard, they're going to have to make sure that they do the spending on the tech to make sure that app functions in each environment.
Do you worry about competition in particular from Airbnb here, which is a different business model, but is growing at a much faster rate and has been really kind of, you know, I thought it was interesting when Airbnb went out, there's a few years back now, but went out and bought a Hotel Tonight, yep. which seemed like it was a much more compatible service to Booking. Who knows, there may have been a bidding war there. But it does seem that they're trying to capture more and more of what had been a traditional hotel market.
Yeah, I think you're right. I happen to like to travel using renting houses. So we've been doing it forever.
We used
when the kids were little, it was just easier to have a little bit more space. As they got older and, you know, my now soon to be 24-year-old was 14. And if we didn't have much going on that day, would sleep till noon. It just gave everybody a little bit more space. But I think the VRBO the Airbnb, that's a little bit of a different customer, maybe a different customer versus the Booking person that's either looking for the cheap hotel, they want the best rate, or they're looking for the amenity-laden hotel or the well-located hotel. I think there's still a bright line. We think there's still a bright line between those markets. We think they're different users. I happen to transition depending on which. We're going into San Fran for a few days. I'm going to be totally kitschy, total touristy thing. I've never been to Alcatraz, and we stretched out our business meeting. I have to suffer the indignity. I'm giving a speech in Napa, so we're going to spend a couple days in San Fran, and I'm going to do the total touristy thing, and I'm going to Alcatraz. But in San Fran, it was more efficient, and we had better options being in a hotel, where when we travel, we love the Southwest. If we're going to Scottsdale, I'd rather rent a house. There's a million of them. So I think there's room for both of those applications.
Pro tip, dress warm.
Dress warm.
But besides that, it's hard to imagine the humidity that you're in right now. Believe me, the change is real. These guys also cut a lot of costs during the pandemic. They reduced their headcount by 23% from 26,400 people down to 20,300 people. So substantial cut in their headcount. I would imagine it's not going to all come roaring back, and that they're able to do more with less because they found out they could.
Yeah. Look, CapEx, there's two big inputs to business, right? It's capital, goods and people goods, or people, you know, doing the work. Booking has invested a lot of money in their technology. And I think you may not, even with business coming back, or I don't think you're going to see the people count rev up as much, particularly if they, from the system standpoint. And look, the more you can do on a cut, like if you have to change your date, right? You're changing your travel dates. If you can do that online and not need a human, people are getting more and more, even old guys like me in their early 50s are like, well, heck with it. If I could just change it online, rock on, rather than having to deal with a customer service representative. So I think you're going to see them do more with less. But the key thing is to make sure what we keep watching, are they spending enough on CapEx in terms of growing and maintaining the technology? Because that beast has to be fed.
And I guess there's a demographic shift too. I'm thinking of my friends at Wealthfront, privately held company that manages essentially robo-advisors, but focused on millennials as a customer base. And their whole model says, millennials tell us over and over again, they do not want to deal with humans. They want to do it all online. On some level, you've got a demographic shift. It's not fast, but you've got a demographic shift that should benefit, bookings, hotel, kayak, and so on.
We agree completely. But the key thing is that technology has to be. Why? I think Uber made a lot of sense because that app is highly intuitive. It's easy. You push the button, you see your car, you click your destination, away you go.
Get her done.
Get her done. And booking, my opinion, they've done a pretty good job. Their site's pretty easy. Click through, the click throughs make sense. Everything kind of flows seamlessly. You get your confirms. And if you need to make a change again, generally, I use it all the time. So I'm a consumer of it, which is one of the reasons that we do like it from an investment standpoint, because it makes sense. And they've got a great business model.
Let me help me understand one more thing. So they report revenues in three ways: agency, merchant, and advertising. I know what advertising is. I know what agency is, which is that they sort of stand in the middle. They get the customer, they collect the money and turn it over to the hotel, car rental, whatever. What is merchant?
Well, the merchant business, that's really the side of the supply.
It's about 40% of the revenues.
Yeah, it's the side of the supply, right? So they get merchant revenue through card affiliation, right? So they get payment, part of the payment process, as I understand. And then they're also participating. They get some of the revenue, let's say returned, if you will, from their participation with certain of these vendors. So they've got a variety of different
animals. So they get a chunk of the room in addition to the credit card fee. Forget the agency fee of just sort of passing the it on. They actually get a chunk of the revenue of the room.
So they're participating.
Yeah. Interesting business, and really interesting to see how this thing might come back, not least of which because, the advertising shrunk by a lot more than the agency and merchant business shrunk, which means it'll probably go first to go and the last to come back. But that kind of gives you a little bit of a tailwind over the course of the next couple of years, probably.
So if they're able to leverage all the savings that they've taken out of their cost structure and have revenue pieces start going up, it's like the restaurant businesses, right? They had to figure out how to do more with less, do the curbside pickup, all this good stuff. They took cost out and now they're getting foot traffic. So if you can maintain your cost
with extra tables, with tables on the street.
Right. Now all of a sudden that drives it. And I think you can translate that magic, if you will, into the booking story, that if these core parts of the business are starting to grow and you start getting the ad revenue, that's where I think why we're seeing the consensus earning numbers. I think the number is like 50, it's 56.3 for next year for 22. So people are saying not only are they going to travel, they're going to travel a lot and people are going to be here and business travel is going to be the difference. I also happen to believe, I know people are saying that we're going to be doing Teams and Zoom and whatever for the rest of eternity. There's still nothing like, you and I sitting across the table. If you're a client, sharing a meal, having a glass of wine, having a beer, catching up eyeball to eyeball.
And play your cards right. That could happen for you in San Francisco in the coming weeks.
I'm hoping
Tony, thank you.
Thank you,
Tony Vinopoli from Knights of Columbus. Really appreciate your time. Knights of Columbus Asset Advisors and Tony Malapoli. Hey, I want to get to our drill down bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. We talked about how the agency business, the main business at Booking, slowed down a lot, 57%. When the drill down continues, we're going to give you that bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. How much did advertising slow down? Again, it was more than 57%. We'll have that number when the drill down continues.
The drill down is brought to you by Era, a one-stop equity platform where you can seamlessly connect to any earnings call and surface actionable insights automatically. Era's AI-powered tools will allow you to work faster and smarter. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to Drill on any of your favorite podcast platforms, but you know that you're doing that right now. You could also leave a review about the Drill Down. Tell us what you like about the show. Tell us what you like about the show. Tell us what other people might like about the show. Recommend it to your friends. We would really appreciate that.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following @DrillDownPod and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down. We've got the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. I told you agency revenues were down 57% for this business during COVID, or at least for 2020. Advertising was down even more. The canary in the coal mine, the first thing to go, advertising was down 67% for this business in 2020. Like I said, usually advertising is the first thing to go, the last thing to come back, but that might create a nice tailwind for this business as they get the users back to their site. All right, you've been listening to The Drill Down. We appreciate your time. I'm Corey Johnson. Isaac Webster is our executive producer. The Drill Down is a production of the Business Podcast Network.